And here we are on Off the Hook Overtime. Everybody make it okay. Looks like we're all here. Great. And I want to continue that conversation. I see our guest has returned.
Yep, I'm back.
How about that? Great conversation before. I don't know if you caught the other conversation we started to have. It's inspirational. You know, hackers doing amazing things just by thinking outside the box. And I don't profess to have answers. And odds are we're going to make lots and lots of mistakes before we actually do something that's right. But to be told that don't bother even trying because it's already been decided and there's nothing you can do, that's something I think we're constantly fighting. So hopefully we can all, no matter what we believe, we can all agree that that is a healthy thing to do, is to try and find solutions.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, how many things in this world wouldn't exist if someone had not refused that impossible was the answer? There's a way, and they just persevere and they press through. I would not want to think of the world as it would be if everyone just assumed that impossible was the answer.
Yeah, I think Einstein might have a thing or two to say about that. And as many scientists, explorers, just people who buck authority and decide to go out on their own and find a solution. You know, sometimes it's a good solution, sometimes it's not, but it almost always leads to something else, which is what it's all about. We're opening up phone calls, phone lines, 802-321-4225, 802-321-4225. And we have that toll-free number, too. Does anybody have that handy? Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah. That is 833-755-2600. Thanks to our pal Lucky225 for setting that up.
Okay, so people want to jump on me for talking about gun control, fine, go ahead, have at it. But, you know, it's relevant. It's all relevant. It all matters. It all ties together. Freedom of speech and free society and technological advances and fighting injustice, it's all part of the same thing.
Yeah, and for the record, based on our last conversation there, you know, I'm not a Second Amendment attorney, you know, by any means. But I do think that the word arms would also encompass bullets as well.
Why are you being difficult, Alex? Really? You're going to say bullets are arms? Where does it say that? Where does it say that? It doesn't say it in the Constitution. Mm-mm.
No, but I'm saying, you know, the right to bear arms.
Yeah.
Right? Arms, I believe, my interpretation of arms would also include ammunition.
But what are you basing that on?
Definition of the word arms, you know, that I think a common colloquial knowledge and parlance and, you know, what you would consider arms.
Well, I looked up arms before and it basically was what I thought, weapons, you know, things like guns and knives. Not everything that you can add to it. I mean, is the package a gun comes in? Is that considered arms too? You know, what you're saying is the whole package is considered an arm, and it's not an arm if you don't have a bullet in it, which opens up a whole other dialogue.
I think the important thing here is that nuance needs to be a part of establishing or at least navigating discussion of these things. Mm-hmm. It's like you said, just the answers may not necessarily be there, but the way of looking at it and the vision ahead, looking forward, what is necessary, what is possible, in the face of impossibility, in the face of people who don't see it.
Yeah.
And getting good at expressing that vision. That's an incredibly hallmark of scientists who understand it, who see it, but communicating that is also equally important, but it is difficult and it's something you have to exercise and practice. And by discussing here and expressing and sharing as much as possible what we know and what we're exploring, what we're interested in, how to organize things, all of that is the crux of that spirit. And I think it's so fun to talk about different ways people employ that.
Go ahead, Gayla.
So I was thinking about, you had said something, I believe, on Twitter a couple days ago about bullets.
Yes, right? I had the same idea on Twitter and I remembered it.
Yes. So the thing that it reminded me of is something that Chris Rock said 22 years ago that I've been quoting since he said it 22 years ago. Where he said, if you you know, made bullets cost $1,000 a piece, there wouldn't be spur of the moment shootings anymore. He said someone would make you angry and you would say, I'm really mad at you, mm-hmm. and I'm going to go get 2 part-time jobs, and when I can afford it in 6 months, I'm going to come back and shoot you.
Yes, that's the kind of thinking I'm talking about. That's creative thinking. And you know, how do you get all the bullets already exist, though, to also be prohibitively expensive? You know, you have to kind of figure out, okay, so it's already a problem. Already there's a vast supply out there. Is there some creative way of thinking? Another suggestion I've seen many times, make guns incredibly valuable so that people are encouraged to sell them back. You know, if every gun, imagine if every gun was worth $1,000 minimum, you know? I imagine a lot of people in various parts of this country would be cashing them in pretty quickly and using the money for something useful.
I think you do make a good point that the availability, part of it is widespread outlets and distribution or online or make your DIY, whatever you want to fill that in with. But mm-hmm. also, get in the light of that availability, that just the low entry point as far as retail costs makes it so that in these situations, people have ready access to way more than, you know, you would want anyone to be anywhere close to in a situation where they might not be able to be rational about their response to, you know, whatever's happening. And having breakdowns with, you know, really incredibly engineered and vaunted for quality that's so dirt cheap, like, that just is nonsense. It should not be that way. We should put a higher value on life and people.
Go ahead, Jason.
You know, it's funny you mentioned, you know, if you make bullets cost prohibitive, I think that there's a natural function in our economy that if you make future bullets cost prohibitive, you make current bullets cost prohibitive, because now they become incredibly valuable. And one, people of means will want to hoard them as a manner of protecting value. And two, people who have them will be more loath to use them because the replacement cost is so high.
A digital currency attached to bullets, bullet coin, we could call it, you know, and the value would just soar because it becomes scarce. But can people build bullets on their own? Is it an easy thing to do? I know nothing about this.
I think that most people struggle to boil pots of water yes. to make pasta. Uh-huh. So I would be afraid to let them make their own bullets.
But it is a popular thing in communities that, you know, people that are gunsmiths or whatever, they're into ammo or whatever. We have a call. Sorry.
Well, we have a call, but we'll get to that in a second. But how about the idea of just making it illegal to fire a gun? Who would argue against that? Alex, yeah, would you argue against that?
No, even in places where, you know, the right to bear arms mm-hmm. certainly is not infringed, where, you know, let's say, you know, you can open carry, right? A lot of these communities already do make it illegal to shoot guns within the confines of certain municipalities or certain cities, of course, you know, especially in the South.
What's the penalty for doing it?
I don't know. Well, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
Fire your gun a year in jail. How about that for a penalty?
Sure. I mean, you'll probably get a fine. Maybe it's a misdemeanor or something like that. Mm-hmm. I doubt that it's a felony.
Real penalties, though. Let's put real penalties on. And then what happens? That's what I'm asking.
Well, probably not much. But in a lot of ways, it already is illegal to do that in certain municipalities and cities. I don't see that as being a major deterrent. And I certainly wouldn't want people to be going to prison for discharging a firearm that did no harm, right? I mean, I don't think that that's necessarily the right solution here.
I think, Trace.
You know, go ahead.
Sorry, no. I just, what occurs to me is traceability is probably more valuable in a criminal and legal sense. So what you're going to see is a lot more smart technology thrown around and buzzwords like that.
The issue is, okay, fine. You fire your gun once, doesn't cause any harm. But I say it does cause harm because it makes it normal. It makes it normal to be firing guns. And you might not hurt anybody, but then maybe the 10th person after you will kill somebody or hurt somebody or hurt themselves. The thing is, you have to justify it by making it a crime. you have to say, why did you do that? You know, what was, and it has to be taken seriously. Now, people who say they collect guns for the beauty of them, for the history, okay, you know, you're not affected by this. Why should you be upset? Hunters, whole different set of regulations for hunting. You're not affected, you know? I'm looking to see why that wouldn't work. And when someone proves that it doesn't work, we'll figure something else out. But we have to have that conversation, is what I'm saying. Should we go to this phone call? Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hi, good evening, everyone.
Hi.
I love that reggae song, and I'd like to know where I could find that.
That actually is, believe it or not, the Specials from an album they put out about a year ago. Yeah, they're back. They put out and that's the second version of that song that they put out, called Blam Blam Fever, I believe, which is also an old reggae standard from Jamaica.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Sure. Anything else you want to contribute?
I love your show.
Okay, I guess that's good enough. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Happy
Bye.
Spring. Bye.
And our phone number is 802-321-4225 if you wish to say something, ask us something, tell us something. Yeah. 802-321-4225. Alex, looks like you have something to say.
Yeah, I think that was a nice call. You know, it's always nice to get positive feedback, you know, from our listeners. We thank you for that caller.
Negative feedback is welcome, too. You know, I don't expect that we have the answers here, but I just like people to be part of the discourse.
We do get our share of negative feedback as well. It's not all positive. You know, people are rather forthright with some of the emails that they send to OTH@2600.
All caps.
.com. We encourage you to be so too.
Yes.
But getting back to this issue though of guns and also, you know, I want to bring it back to the police and the use of excessive force here too, because, you know, I like what you're doing here, Emmanuel, which is trying to think about this not in the specific terms of the issue, but a broader context.
I want hackers to solve guns. I want them to do that tonight.
You know, and something I've been saying
education tomorrow. Yes.
Is that, you know, I think, honestly, the best lawyers out there mm-hmm. have a hacker mentality, right? We're thinking about how to change the system. Why does the policy this way? Does it have to be this way? You know, is there an underlying philosophy that we can change that would dictate a different outcome, right? We're talking about systems and change here. And one of the things that I want to bring up, and I think the overtime is really the better place to do it, but in terms of discouraging police from using excessive force, I think what Jason has put together with Human Rights First and the Lambda School, Blue Witness, is such a great step towards accountability for the use of excessive force. But if we want to change it systemically, we have to come to grips with the fact that we have created a system, and we are talking about systems here, where people are not all equal under the law, right? Mm-hmm. We like to say, no, but we like to point at yesterday's verdict and say, this is an indication that in this country, nobody is above the law. You know, we can hear pundits saying that all the time.
Yeah. You always have to add sometimes to the end of that sentence.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, but it is certainly not true. We have created a system. The Supreme Court of the United States has created a legal doctrine known as qualified immunity that has allowed police officers to use excessive force with near impunity for the last almost 60 years. It's about 65 years that this has been on the books. Well, I think 64. And it started in 1967. And this issue of qualified immunity really allows police officers to get off, in most cases, scot-free for doing things that if we did them to another human being, it would be a felony. It might be a very high-level felony. We might be going away for 10, 20, 30 years if we did certain things that police have gotten immunity for doing. And the reason being is that this is a legal fiction that we created. So how can we say that nobody's above the law in this country when we have a legal doctrine like qualified immunity? It started off as being this modest exception for public officials who believed that they were doing the right thing under the law, right? And then it expanded. And it expanded to basically that you had to prove that you had a pre-existing right to something that was infringed, right? You had to prove that you had this, well-established pre-existing right. And what the hell does that mean? right? I mean, so this has been judicially interpreted for quite a while. And the way in which the courts have come to try to wrangle with these pre-existing rights is that in order to pierce this doctrine of qualified immunity, you had to be able to point to a specific context and specific conduct in a prior case where it was held that this was not, or that there was a pre-existing right and that the police who did this were wrong. So you had to be able to point to a case in the past where a judge had already said that in this context, let's say if you were tased three times on your neck and once on your foot, that this was absolutely wrong and you had a pre-existing right not to be tased, a clear, well-established pre-existing right to be left alone. And because of this very highly fact-specific legal analysis, the burden of persuasion here is on the plaintiff. The plaintiff is also the victim in these types of situations. Mm-hmm. So I think until we, as attackers and lawyers, begin to seriously reconsider this doctrine of qualified immunity and its place in the United States, we are going to continue to encourage this type of excessive use of force. And I think that we can use technology to try to hold them accountable like Jason's doing, and I think it's great. But we need to a full court press, so to speak, on this issue.
Can I also just introduce my out-of-the-box thinking to this issue in one simplistic statement, and that's the Supreme Court oftentimes gets it completely wrong throughout history. They have made some horrible, horrible decisions. Dred Scott versus Sanford, going back to 1857, Buck versus Bell, 1927, so many. Just look at bad Supreme Court decisions that are no longer the law. But today, we hold them in high esteem. We say, if they say this is the law, might be for now, doesn't mean they're right, doesn't mean it's correct, doesn't mean the future will judge that in a positive manner. Let's take this other phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello.
How you doing?
First time calling.
Great.
Long time listener. So arms.
Yes, go ahead.
To be like fully armed or fully equipped would include bullets, and that is probably an implication of a working militia, therefore part of the right. That doesn't mean that we can't change the Constitution at all, amendments, etc. That said, making bullets more expensive, probably not going to work. Because they're actually fairly easy to make once you know how to make them.
Okay.
But making firing a gun illegal could possibly work.
Uh-huh. I have support.
I have support. But we definitely would have to work on, like, qualified immunity and our policing judicial system in the first place by far before mm-hmm. that's going to be effective.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said.
Well said.
Yeah, that's about it.
Okay. May I ask where you're calling from?
Where you're calling from?
Chicago, Illinois.
Okay, great. That's where Jason is from. He's with us right now.
Wonderful. Another Chicago neighbor.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks for that call. Keep listening.
Absolutely. Bye.
Bye. Sorry about the echo. I'm not sure. Sometimes we get echo when we talk down the line. I don't think there's anything
it
we can do.
It may have been their audio if they were monitoring without headphones, but it's no worry. It wasn't so
I thought
loud.
It was a longer delay. That's why I didn't think it was that, but okay, fine.
I think, yeah, they're just monitoring so they could hear, but it helps to have headphones sometimes. But
only I was echoing.
It wasn't so bad. Okay. Well, you were speaking with them.
Yeah. Okay, I guess that makes sense. Yeah. Rob, go ahead.
The question of whether or not the gun is arms and if you need bullets in it for it to be arms.
Mm-hmm.
I know, and Alex, maybe you can clarify this if I get this wrong, but like there's that concept of anything can be a deadly weapon, because if you have like a pipe wrench that you use for fixing things, but you whomp someone over the head with it and kill them, when you're sent up for that murder, it's assault with a deadly weapon. And, you know, that wrench that you have, although it wasn't intended to kill people with, you're then further guilty of using that as a deadly weapon. So it recategorizes the thing as a weapon legally.
And speaking of arms, how come it's I can't have a bazooka? How does the Constitution not protect that? Or a tank? I can't have a tank either.
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously there's regulation already.
But if there's regulation on that, why can't there be regulation on other things? That's what I never could understand.
Well, there's certainly, but to go back to Rob's query, you know, he is exactly right here too. You know, that anything can be a deadly weapon, and that, you know, it really depends upon your intent when you wield whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
right? But you know, to go back to your question too, Emmanuel, there are certain things that are regulated as munitions, as well that you know, historically probably shouldn't have been. To bring it right back down to hacker culture, think about encryption. It was illegal to export strong cryptography for many, many years under the ITAR regulations, because they were considered to be ammunition. So exporting cryptography was analogous to trying to export a tank or a bazooka. You know, and this was why, you remember this probably back from the 90s, people got the RSA Pearl algorithm printed on T-shirts and tattooed on their arms.
Yes.
So technically, you know, their arm or that T-shirt wasn't allowed to leave the country, and it was to demonstrate the idiocy or the ineffectiveness of those particular types of laws.
If it was considered a munition, would it not be protected under the Second Amendment?
Talking about the distinction between export ban, like domestic use, and international exports.
Right, we're talking about that, but I'm talking about in this country. You know, could you say that encryption is protected because it can be considered a munition, and that covers the Second Amendment covers that?
Well, then you would be allowed to use it in the United States, not necessarily to export it. But look, that's a pretty fascinating legal argument that you come up with, which is to use the Second Amendment to protect cryptography.
Covering a lot of ground tonight.
Oh, that's like going the opposite direction.
Sometimes you have to run back behind the quarterback before you can make that charge to the touchdown. We have another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Greetings.
How you doing? I think we know who this is.
I'm surviving.
Good, good.
I did an experiment with my vaccination that I thought you might be interested in.
Experimented with your vaccination. Do I want to know what you did?
Yes.
Okay.
The day before I got my first shot, I got tested for antibodies.
I did the same thing.
And I had heard that they were working on a test specifically for did the shot take. And, you know, I was told, you know, you've been told this isn't necessary, and it's not a test for that, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, it's what we've got, and I'm hoping that the other test for did it take will be available by the time I'm completely vaccinated. So once I was fully vaccinated, and 2 weeks later, mm-hmm. and a few days, I went to get that test again, and the doctor told me again, this doesn't test for that. But he went and he checked, and he said, you know, that experimental thing for the spike protein is now listed as something that we can order. It's experimental, and your insurance might not pay for it. And I said, I want it. So I got both of the tests together.
Okay.
And I got the results back a day or two later, or three. The IgAG, or whatever the correct term is for the have you had it in the past? One came back negative, you have not had COVID. And the one that was for IgG and spike S1/S2 came back positive. You have had COVID in the past.
Hmm.
So in other words, the vaccine did indeed work. And in 6 months or 9 months or whatever, whenever it seems appropriate, based on the science at the time, I can always get that test again and see how strongly those spike proteins are still in there. Do they register or not? Because it's strictly a yes-no. It doesn't give you, you have a few, you have a lot, you have an average number. It just, it's yes-no.
Interesting. So if those tests become somewhat run-of-the-mill, that could be something that we all do to see if we need a booster.
Yes.
Great.
You asked a question before. You wanted to solve police violence tonight.
Well, I want to solve guns tonight, but police violence, if we can solve that tonight, too, I'll consider it a win.
Okay. Now, I have to warn you, I got a phone call 15 minutes before the radio show ended, and so I've missed a bunch of the discussion, but I think that if we want to solve police violence, we should get rid of police being armed. If we can't get to that yet, and also handcuffs might be good too, but at the very minimum, get those guns out of their hands.
That's a very good point. And a lot of people would dismiss that out of hand, but I want to entertain that because if you are trained in de-escalation and taking control in situations, you don't need a gun to do that. A good professional does not need a gun for that. And I think what cops do is they rely on guns as crutches, and they use them all the time. For instance, what just happened in Columbus. That could have been addressed without the use of deadly force. Absolutely. No matter what you believe of the person who lost their life, you know, there are so many instances where guns are not the answer. And so many of them are cops proving that.
Well, if I could continue with what I was trying to unpack.
Go ahead.
There's a lot of people who are saying, well, the police need it because blah, blah, blah. But the only reason that police are at all targets is because they have the guns. Any criminal who has a gun is afraid that the police will shoot them, and so they are willing. And the same thing with suicide by cop. If police didn't have the guns, then they wouldn't be the targets that they are. But let us consider that at the moment, people are not ready for that step yet of taking the guns away from the police. Even though it worked in Britain, in the United Kingdom, bobbies for centuries didn't have any guns, and even now most of them don't.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to do their police work just fine. But assuming in the U.S. that people are not ready for that yet, if we had a one strike and you're in the office policy,
yes.
Yeah.
And they keep saying that most police never fire their guns in their entire career. Well, then they're not affected. And so you have a one strike. If you draw your gun, we don't have to prove whether you did it justifiably or unjustifiably. If you have drawn it once, we want to make sure that it's not going to happen again, and you are going to be safe in the police station where you won't need a gun again.
This struck me, this very thing struck me with just the status quo where we're at and thinking it through, and just it occurred to me that, and that's why I mentioned it earlier towards the end of the show, just like, they've proven they can't use them responsibly. In any other situation where an oversight or an authority figure would be like, handling children, you know, discipline in certain situations. If you can't handle something responsibly, you take it away. And, you know, whether it's reform, whether it's retraining, whenever we get to that, yeah, then maybe they're on the table. Maybe there's a response team that is proven to have a lot more acumen and training and are only brought in with a liaison of sorts who's on the ground and deem the situation, the incident, one that needs that kind of response. On and on, we can get to that point, but it's just been such a melee of incident after incident after incident of carelessness with something that is really dangerous, just generally, if not used properly. Well, they're not being used properly.
Mm-hmm.
They're reaching for them, exactly. like was said, as a excuse or a leaning on it in a lazy way. That's not doing your job well. Aside from, you know, swearing and, you know, being generally rude and running red lights and not generally running around cities with impunity, that starts with little things. That behavior just escalates.
It goes to your
head.
And
you become an officer in certain situations, like this Chauvin character.
And if you don't, you become somebody that's affected by that person. You're afraid of that person. You defend that person. Go ahead, Jason.
So I think that people who look at police, like, we keep hearing this word police reform, and I think that's part of the problem, is we're trying to reform a system that is so utterly broken and a culture that's so deeply entrenched. And maybe it's time for just a complete reimagining of what we think police are, what they do, and how they operate. You know, I've heard the concept batted around of having police carry professional liability insurance so that bad actors get priced out of the profession. We have doctors do it, lawyers do it, truck drivers have it. Why shouldn't police officers? Why are they exempt from this? And part of the answer is existing culture, part of it's police unions. But, you know, we just need to break down these preconceived notions of this broken system and just kind of start from scratch. You mentioned wanting hackers to solve this. Sometimes the project is so broken that we just start over from scratch and we start building anew.
Yeah, well, if it can be defined as something that is completely broken, and I think that needs to be made clearer, because when people walk around saying abolish the police, well, it's very easy for the other side to say, oh, they just want complete anarchy. But no, there's more to that thinking. Abolish what we have now. Build something better. I don't think anybody is saying that we don't need to enforce laws or that, you know, we can just trust everybody to do the right thing. I think we need to admit the system doesn't work. Imagine if you said, let's reform organized crime. You know, that doesn't make any sense. No, you have to abolish it and do something else. Caller, are you still there?
I'm still here.
What do you think of all
that?
Can
you hear me?
Yes, we hear you fine.
Okay, because I was trying to finish explicating before, but you didn't seem able to hear me.
Well, we were having a conversation, but go ahead.
Sorry about that.
Okay. Someone was talking about having a specially trained group for emergencies. That's exactly what they do in the UK right now. The only police who have any guns are a special, like, squat type
right.
team, which is only brought in for major emergencies. And they're very, very, very highly trained. But I think that a crux of the problem is that they need to have better screening for who gets to be a police officer in the first place. Anyone who is willing to shoot rather than be themselves vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anyone who won't put the safety of the public above their own safety shouldn't become a member of the police. Anyone who's afraid that they'll get shot first, those fearful people shouldn't be on the force.
Yeah, well, I think also we have to look at the training, because they're fearful people because of the amount of training that they've gotten, and many times it's insufficient. They should not be making decisions in that way. There are much more mature, professional ways of dealing with things, and I think a lot of cops would be able to do that if they were trained properly and taught that certain things are unacceptable. This mentality, this blue line that you never cross, that's wrong, and that's we've grown past that, and we need to think of something better.
Immunity.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks for your call. We're going to try and open up to. Go ahead.
Hello.
Finish up.
I just wanted to say that it's not just guns. It's also police chases are dangerous for everyone, whether involved or not involved, for bystanders, and people get killed in
absolutely
police cases.
That's what Kyle was saying before about running red lights and all sorts of things that cops believe they're above the law, and we reinforce that. We shouldn't permit that to keep happening. But again, we want to open up the phones for other people. Thank you very much for that call. Our phone number, 802-321-4225. Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, as we've established, I think a thing that's really missing in the system as it is now is accountability. Going back to the qualified immunity issue, I mean, if you look at the pictures that were taken of this Chauvin character as his sentence or as his conviction was handed down, he was so confused. He did not see that coming. Right up until the end of this, he was convinced that he did nothing wrong. And you see this time and again in these cases. And, you know, we've taken technical measures. We have body cams on the cops that now show footage, usually right after one of these shootings, of the cop, the cop's hand covering the camera.
Don't forget the way that the George Floyd death was originally reported, that he had a medical incident while interacting with the police. If that camera had not been filming, we never would have found out what really happened.
Yeah, and as long as the accountability of the police lies in the police themselves, you know, they're very good at saying we've examined what we did and we are convinced that we did nothing wrong, and so according to ourselves, we're fine.
So how do you convince people who believe that us saying things like this is an attack on the police when all we're asking for is truth and accountability? You know, it's worrisome because there are people out there who really feel paranoid that everyone's out to get them. And why would people be out to get cops if they were behaving properly, if they weren't doing things that were harmful to the community? Why can't we have this dialogue where, you know, they sincerely want to do something, where they live in the community, where they're part of the community, where you know who they are? Instead, they're anonymous. You know, they don't even release their names when they kill people. It's not a healthy situation. Yes, Alex.
I'd like to read a short couple paragraphs here from theappeal.org. They've done a lot of work and research and advocacy around trying to disband the doctrine of qualified immunity for police officers. And here's one that this is a particularly egregious case from 2004. So on the morning of November 23rd, 2004, Malaika Brooks was driving her 11-year-old son to school when Seattle police, that'll get your ears perked up, Kyle, Seattle police pulled her over for speeding. When the officers gave her a ticket and asked her to sign it, Brooks refused, believing that she had been wrongly pulled over and thinking mistakenly that her signature would be an admission of guilt. The officers threatened to throw her in jail, and when Brooks still declined to sign, a sergeant ordered her arrest. To push Brooks to step out of the car, one of the officers pulled out a taser and asked if she knew what it was. She didn't, but told the officer she was 7 months pregnant. The officers chatted in front of her, casually discussing which part of her body they would tase. "Well, don't do it in her stomach," one of them said. "Do it in her thigh." The officers twisted Brooks's arm behind her back and tased her 3 separate times, first on her thigh, then in the arm, and then in the neck, before dragging her into the street, laying her face down, and cuffing her. Now, what do you think happened there?
Well, first of all, I just want to take a moment to really fixate on what we're talking about here. We're talking about people inflicting torture upon somebody because they didn't sign their name.
They didn't sign it? Seriously,
if you give someone a ticket and they don't sign it, it's still a ticket.
It's still a ticking.
What the hell? This is an example of they have to start thinking differently. And if they don't sign the ticket, whatever. Get on with your life. Let them get on with their life.
Well,
you know,
if you're angry about the facts leading up to this, you're going to be even more angry about how the lawsuit ended up.
Because I'm sure I will. I'm sure I will. What happened?
And, you know, she made this into she brought a federal lawsuit for violation of her civil rights. And six federal judges agreed that the officer's use of severe force without any threat to their own physical safety violated the United States Constitution. But they still threw out the case. They dismissed the case because of the doctrine of qualified immunity, that there were no – this wasn't a clearly established right, and there were no circumstances that could be analogized from previous cases. And so her lawsuit went nowhere. She took this basically to a circuit court, a federal circuit court of appeals.
Mm-hmm.
And this conduct was still found to not be legally actionable because of the doctrine of qualified immunity. So, yeah, absolutely. You need to retrain these people. Yeah, and our previous caller, I think, you know, look, she had a great point, too, about taking guns away from the police. And there are two points there. One, I believe that there are certain smaller municipalities around the country that are thinking of doing the exact same thing, at least insofar as policing for minor violations, traffic violations, things like that go. Those cops shouldn't be carrying guns. And even to a certain extent in New York City, we don't have ordinary traffic cops carrying pistols.
Would you be as afraid of a cop if they weren't armed? And I don't think that translates to not respecting the cop because he doesn't have a gun. I think that's how they interpret it. They say, if I don't have a gun, they're not going to respect me. And if that's the only thing that gives you respect, you're definitely not doing it right.
Think about the story that I told when I was, you know, verbally abused and accosted by a police officer, you know, turning down 7th Avenue when I was with my wife and child a couple of years ago. And that was the off the hook episode when we were talking about the data from, I think, the Civilian Complaint Review Board in New York City being released public, right? You know, I didn't want to yell back and scream at this guy or chase him down the street because, number one, he's an unhinged man. Number two, he's armed. He's carrying a loaded gun. And number three, it was a canine unit, too. So he's got, you know, a dog that's also considered to be a deadly weapon in the car with him. But to go back to the point that the caller was making, though, if you do take the guns away from the police in certain contexts like this, it's going to change, I think, the type of person that is attracted to becoming a police officer. Because to a certain extent, I think a lot of these people, they are, to a degree, fascinated by carrying a gun. They're enamored by the idea of being able to legally carry a gun. And if they weren't able to do that,
right,
they perhaps wouldn't become a police officer in the first place.
If dogs are considered weapons, are they protected under the Second Amendment?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah, think about that.
Second Amendment attorney, but... you know, let's find out.
The right to keep and bear dogs.
There you go. Yes, Rob.
I just want to point out our guest Jason Long had to leave, but we're very grateful to have had him on Off the Hook.
And, he was great
over time, and
he was amazing.
I want to point out listeners can find his work and get in touch with him. He's jlong5795 on Twitter, and also jlong5795 on GitHub, and. You know, follow the work he does, and yes, a.humanrightsfirst.dev. I've been looking at this map as we've been doing the show, and it's really eye opening, and it's a really important project.
Gila.
I also, speaking of Twitter, would just like to point out that we are always monitoring at Hacker Radio Show during the show. So if you have something you want to say, but you're phone shy and you don't want to call us, you can always ping us on Twitter, and we'd like to thank the listener who sent the XKCD strip that refers to what we were talking about earlier. So thank you for that. And yeah, you can always find us on Twitter.
Really?
If you, for whatever reason, don't want to call us.
XKCD has done a comic based on this radio show. I am blown away. No, I mean, he works fast. I know that, but really, it's an honor. Yeah. It is an honor. Yeah. Wow.
Randall Monroe does good work, but a listener sent us, we were talking about the the heavy encryption being a munition technically, and of course there's an XKCD for that. XKCD 504 is about people classifying crypto as munitions, so it's protected to because if anyone comes to try and take it away from you, then you break out the Second Amendment. And I'm messing up the joke. Go check it out, XKCD.
The joke is there. It's fantastic. 504. But yeah, it's so. But thank you to our listeners for keeping up with us on Twitter during the show also.
Yes. Thank you very much on our Twitter ID, Hacker Radio Show. I also want to expand on something Kyle said about the system not working with cops. It's been proven over and over again. It's not working the way it is. It has to change. But it goes further than that. The whole gun culture in this country, we've tried it. We've tried it the way the people who interpret the Second Amendment in a particular manner wanted it to be tried. It didn't work. We have to at least acknowledge that it didn't work. Once we can agree that it didn't work, we all have to think of something better. And that's where all the discussion starts. But just allowing everybody to do whatever they want, pretty much, which is what we've been doing over the past, and it hasn't been all the whole history of the country, it's only been in the past few decades. What that has resulted in is a heavily armed country where gun violence runs rampant and everybody's afraid, and people get more guns because they're afraid of the other people that got more guns. That doesn't work. So if we can all agree it doesn't work, okay, let's work together. And the people that we think are our enemies might be our allies, because I'm sure they don't want to live in a world like that either. Gila?
Absolutely true story. I went to college in a very large metropolitan area where we were all told, when you're driving, don't use your horn, because you never know who in the other car, what other driver might have a gun in the glove compartment, and if you anger them, they will pull it out and shoot you. To this day, I don't honk when I'm driving.
You ever hear the phrase, an armed society is a polite society? It's not true. An armed society is a scared society, all right?
Yes.
And
yes,
we deserve better than that. Our kids should not be having to go through metal detectors to get into schools. All right, they should not have to worry about, they should not know what the word lockdown means. When I went to school, I didn't know what the word lockdown meant. There weren't cops in the schools. This is being considered the new normal, and it's not even that new anymore. And it's not right, and it's not the way it works in other parts of the world, and we can do better, and we can be just as free as we want to be. Look at the countries where this isn't an issue. It's Scandinavia, it's Western Europe. These are democracies. These aren't communist states like the right wing will have you believe. You know, you have a situation in England where the gun possession is a mere fraction of what it is here. And of course, gun deaths are a mere fraction. This whole argument that if you take away guns from law-abiding citizens, only criminals will have guns. If that were true, then the gun crime rate in England would be pretty high. And it's not. It's about half what it is here, maybe less. So all these arguments can be diffused pretty easily. We have to stop elevating them to the state of legitimacy where, you know, somebody says something factual and you get somebody to disagree with them based on no facts and they're given an equal platform. That's just not fair to anybody. We have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. I don't think we have a phone call anymore. I'm sorry. Sometimes it takes a little while to get to people. It's a very sad sound there that the empty phone line has. But if you want to call us, our phone line apparently is open, 802-321-4225. I want to hear that again. Oh, so what happens if it rings while it's up like that? Will we hear the ring? You can help us with an experiment, folks. We're going to have this sound up until somebody calls us, and maybe we'll hear the ring. I'll try not to make it too loud.
You're going to hear the answering service, I think.
Okay, I'm curious what I'll hear.
And then you'll hear me hit the tone.
Well, I'm gonna lower the volume before you do that.
Are you sure?
Yeah, but if somebody just calls 802-321-4225, you don't have to stay on. Just ring the phone, and we'll see if it rings audibly. When I was a kid, I had a suction cup.
In case of a fast pickup, we ask you to let us know that you're not a voicemail system, so you need to press 1 to take this call.
Interesting. That's the first time we ever had Google like broadcast that over the radio. So now we know. That's what comes over. Let's see if our caller stayed on. Good evening. You made it.
I made it back. That sound was really cute.
Uh-huh.
So for policing and stuff.
Yes.
I had a point and I kind of forgot it because of all that humorous stuff.
It happens to the best of us.
Like for right to bear arms, like Australia completely removed them from all society.
Another communist country, Australia. Yeah.
Notoriously communist.
Well, it's just amazing that these ridiculous statements about how people live in fear and these horrible societies are some of the best places in the world. And, you know, I'm not saying they don't have problems, but they don't have this problem. And wouldn't it be nice if we could join them on that? I don't think we'd be giving up very much.
Yeah, exactly. So when it comes to abolition and policing, right, the thing is, the culture of policing is actually not about, like, them doing their job and having to pull a gun. It's if they're afraid for their life for any reason, they pull a gun.
Yeah, and I think cops get afraid too much. You know, Marines don't get afraid, do they? They never get afraid. I just think, you know, part of the training should be you have to, and this is what they claim, you have to stand up to these threats and just, you know, I guess confront them in a better way than just shooting willy-nilly and oftentimes, you know, killing for no reason or killing the wrong people or just creating a very dangerous situation.
But that's the thing. When it comes down to it, they're being traumatized and not actually getting, like, treatment for PTSD, et cetera, in an effective manner. And therefore, and then they go back out way too soon and end up, like, getting flashbacks and shooting a kid.
Yeah, yeah. And
even if they are actually afraid for their lives, even if it's reasonable, that doesn't mean that they should have a gun in that situation. And, yeah, they'll have, like, desk leave and, like, work paperwork pushing stuff around for, like, 6 months, maybe a year. If they feel like they can go back or they're needed back, they'll be pushed back into it.
Yeah, I've always been of the opinion that if a cop kills somebody, that's it. You're done on the street, at least, because it becomes normal to you. And it's not something that ever should become normal to anybody. Shooting somebody, that's a failure. It needs to be treated as a failure. I'm not saying it's necessarily their fault, but it's definitely something that can't become habit or something that you, you know, you're keeping a running tally of. And unfortunately, that seems to be the culture we're in.
Or makes you a hero.
Uh-huh. Or as part of locker room talk. Yeah, that's very, very unhealthy. Anything else, caller?
That's about it. They also, it's not just that they do it for self-defense, but also they're very insular and they end up only trusting other cops.
Yeah, that's so unhealthy. That's so unhealthy. You start thinking of the people that you're walking amongst or driving through as the enemy. You become an occupying force. You treat them with contempt, and they view you with fear. How can anybody think these things are healthy? And of course, the two problems that we're talking about tonight are related because these cops who are constantly afraid, they're afraid because there are so many guns. And there are so many guns because people are insisting that everybody has the right to get as many guns as they want and they can just do whatever. You know, two things that don't work, that have not worked. And we keep saying this, but we keep basically getting to that dead end where, well, nothing we can do about it. I disagree. I think with creative thinking and throwing some technology in there, maybe we can figure something out. But we have to want to do that. And we have to be open to all kinds of crazy ideas. And I'm just putting forth my own crazy ideas for now.
The real answer is abolition and starting from the ground up. That's it.
Okay.
And the real reason for that is I just lost it.
Well, if you get it back, call us back. We'll be here a few more minutes.
Bye.
All right. Thanks for your call. And, of course, you can write to us, oth@2600.com. That's email. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, you know, you talk about these crazy ideas, but, like, every idea is pretty much a crazy idea until someone makes it work.
Exactly. So, yeah. I mean, you know, we spend a lot of time condemning the billionaires. You know, the Elon Musks. I think what Elon Musk is doing with space is really, really cool. Can't stand the guy, you know, and I hate so many other things, but I'm not going to deny myself the thrill of seeing if his latest rocket blows up. I want to see these technology. I want to move ahead. You know, just the other day, this is an interesting example, actually. We have this commuter railroad line. You might have heard of it, the Long Island Railroad. You have? Okay, good. And for many, many years, forever, actually, going out to Montauk, you have to take the slow diesel train. There's a lot of diesel lines because they can't electrify. It's prohibitively expensive to electrify train lines. We're talking billions of dollars. So it's one of those things where, yeah, you know, it'd be nice if you had a one-seat ride into Manhattan. It'd be nice if you could go faster. But it's not going to happen because nobody wants to spend that kind of money and it'll take too long. Well, you know, just the other day, I read about this new technology that's just being tried out now. I can't believe nobody thought of it before, where batteries are put on electric train cars in lieu of the third rail. And these batteries basically charge while the train is using the third rail or at a docking station somewhere. And then when it's not on an electric line, it acts like an electric train because of the batteries that it has. What an amazing solution to a problem that's a fraction of the cost and can almost instantly convert non-electrified lines into the same thing. Trains that go as fast, no need to change. You know, if somebody had mentioned this a few years ago, they would have been told, nope, impossible, won't happen. And now, looks like it's going to happen. So creative thinking, new technology, a refusal to simply accept what you're told is impossible. I think we can apply that to almost anything. And, you know, medical problems and scientific brick walls that we run up against. Obviously, we have to travel faster than the speed of light at some point in humanity's existence. We have to figure that out. We will. And we'll figure it out by experimentation, thinking outside the box, and just believing in ourselves.
Maybe some quantum mechanics and stuff.
I'm not opposed to quantum mechanics in any of these things.
Just throwing that in there.
All right. Wow. This really keeps us going. You want to try for one more phone call, or are we tired?
We could take one more.
Remember when overtime was only like 10 minutes long, and now it's turned into an hour. We can't stop talking. Well, we had a lot of good calls tonight, and if you want to make one more call, 802-321-4225, we ask that hopefully new people call so that we get a variety of voices. And feel free to say whatever is on your mind. That's what we're here for.
And if you would like to listen to this show over again, share it with somebody, or listen to all of our shows in reverse order.
Every single one.
You could talk to your smart device, use the wake word, and say, play the Hacker Radio Show.
That's all you have to say?
No, I think you say, Off the Hook Radio Show.
Wow.
And it will play.
I think we have a phone call?
Do
we have
I'm sorry, I was answering the phone and talking.
Yeah, you're talking. Well, you weren't answering the phone. That's what I was waving my hands. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Greetings, I am calling about last week's submission for Trump-related social network names. And what I proposed to Alex was Trump-pire, like umpire, to say, you're out of here. And that's my pitch.
That's a good one.
For people who might not be familiar with what this was, Alex, could you explain what the caller is?
Yeah, well, last week we were talking about Trump putting together his own social media network. And, you know, there was news stories about this, and we had hypothesized about how quickly he changed his stance about Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. And then we opened up the airwaves, or rather the phone lines, to our callers to suggest names for that particular social media account. And what's so funny is caller, literally right before you called in, I was thinking to myself, I should probably mention the Trump hire suggestion from last week. So there is a weird synchronicity right there. And I think one of the better suggestions that we had last week, which wasn't really necessarily a social media platform, though I do love the Trump hire suggestion, what came from our very own Gila, that was if Trump was putting together a dating site, he was going to call it, what was it, Gila?
Orange Crush.
That's great.
Oh, that's wrong on so many levels.
I love it. I think that's a I'm so glad you called, caller, and probably a great spot to end it up in, where we were last week.
Yeah. All right, thanks. Thanks for that call.
Now, if I can pitch one more,
yes, go ahead.
Website for George Washington, it'd be Green Signal Singles.
Green Singles. Okay. All right. Interesting. Thank you for that.
All right.
Good night, everyone.
All right. Good night. That's
thank you for that.
Great call to end on. What was that other right wing social media site that was launching? Frank something.
Frank Speech, which apparently has face planted in a big bad way.
Yeah. What? Because I went to that. First, it checks your browser. What is that? This process is automatic. Your browser will proceed. And here's the pillow guy now talking on my laptop. Except no sound is coming out. You know what? That's fine. It says, thanks for visiting Frank with over 28 requests in just 2 days. No, that's 2B, 2 billion, I guess. Or 28. I'm not sure which. Now, 2 billion requests in just 2 days. The Frank Speech experiment is a massive success for you. Okay, there's a problem there because they didn't end that sentence. They put a dash after massive success, and then for you, they capitalized the F, and you don't capitalize after a dash. That's what I'm pointing out here. And they finished by saying, right now, we're working on new features. Keep checking back. We'll be up shortly. And that time, they did a dash, and they didn't uppercase it, so they did it right. Okay, so wait a minute. So because you got so many requests, you're down? You don't exist? That's kind of weird. And is a request an account, or is a request just number of times people tried to get through to this web page and get nowhere?
It could be both. I think part of the problem, and I'm really just spitballing here, but I think part of the problem was that Mike Lindell was like, hey, let's put on a social media site. We can use my father's barn. And then the infrastructure just said, no, thank you. And they, you know, tried to open it up for like VIP signups and then everybody else a day later, and the whole thing just melted down. So I don't know what's actually happening.
Like the Super League of the internet, apparently.
Basically.
Wow. And, you know, I've heard some late night talk show hosts say that he missed a golden opportunity here because he's the pillow guy. It should have been called Pillow Talk. Wouldn't that have been a better name for a social media site run by him? Frank Speech?
I mean, they're all bad and pretty good at the same time.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I'm always curious, you know, what these things are going to have on them and what kind of security holes they might have as well. So I always, you know, look around a little bit, and I think we all should do that.
I just love the griftiness. Go ahead, Gil.
I was going to say, I know what Frank is not going to have on it, and that is swearing and naked people.
How are you going to regulate swearing? I mean, that's the internet, right? I mean, you can't have a site, and especially calling it the voice of free speech, but you can't say, God damn it. I mean, really, that's you don't know what free speech is then. And yeah, I know about the hypocrisy. We're on WBAI, the voice of free speech, and we can't curse. That's the FCC that says that. And plus, we don't need to do that to express ourselves.
Everything else we say.
You got to be extra careful when you are the station that that was the establishing one to get in trouble over these things.
Yeah, we thought better of the courts than they actually were. Okay, folks, any final thoughts? Because we've been doing this for a while now.
I just once again gotta say thank you to Jason Long for being with us. That was very, very good of him to join us. And thank you all out there who keep getting in touch, whether you're emailing oth@2600.com or tweeting at us at Hacker Radio Show or getting in touch with us over Mastodon at Hacker Radio Show at mastodon.social. We appreciate your input, and it adds so much to what we do here. This isn't just about us. This is about you and communicating with you. So thank you. And if you want to be part of all this and be part of what makes all this happen, go to give2wbai.org or call 212-209-2950 and donate what you can to help us keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah, reiterating Rob's point there, it's always cool when we get tips or ideas, stories, anecdotes, all that stuff is so cool. So please participate, share with us things you're interested in. We had so many stories tonight we wanted to get to. There's always so much going on, we're going to update everyone on what's been going on and what will transpire in the next weeks. And please write to us, oth@2600.com.
I learned about the School of the Air in Australia. That was an amazing letter that we got, and some history that goes back to the 1960s or maybe even before that. Kids learning via shortwave. So, yeah, you know, it's kind of like we're reliving history by, you know, using Zoom. Kids could be using shortwave instead.
I feel like the takeaway was like, you use what you've got. I mean, that was the answer to what the question was last week.
All the kids had shortwave transmitters. They all have those.
Well, they're mass produced on some scale, some level. That was what they had. That was like readily available. So that's the thing. Like, you asked, what would we do? What have we done in the 80s? Mm-hmm. What would we have done to organize in the 90s with 56K modems or whatever? Like, you know, at each point, we use as much of what we've got, and this is the key, in the weird and unusual and unexpected ways. And that's uh-huh, how we get uh-huh on in these different moments. And now we've got, you know, a pretty good system. Maybe the next pandemic it'll be 20 times cheaper because broadband is now been in the limelight.
My wish is for the next pandemic, if we start using shortwave again, I think that'll be a move forward. I would be into that. I'd like that a lot more than Zoom. It would be a lot more. And also, I'm wondering, those kids that are talking back to their teachers, not talking back to their teachers, you know what I mean, are they talking to the whole world as well? I mean, you can't really aim shortwave at a particular school. What's that?
They would have to be, right? I mean, it's not narrow, right?
No, it's not. It can propagate all around the world. So that must have led to some confusion. Maybe a different teacher answered their question from a different country or gave them wrong information from an enemy country. Who knows? I'd love to hear stories. I'd love to hear tapes. There must be so many of those. And I'd also love to see the equipment if that still exists. Anyway, so we have talked about it an awful lot. We've encouraged people to think differently, and which is the right way to say that, by the way, not the way Apple says it. And again, you know, the whole controversial issues with police and with guns, you may think completely differently, but I hope that we all agree that thinking outside the box is a way of addressing problems and the things that I've been bringing up, or just basically ways of what if we approach the problem this way? And maybe that's a solution that more people can live with. Maybe that'll solve the problem. Maybe that'll cause a new problem. Who knows? But we have to have these conversations and never, never accept that something can't be changed for the better, especially if you're a hacker. All right, we'll see you next time. Good night, everybody. You know, you could say good night back to me.
Good night.
Good night.
Didn't hurt, did it?
Bye.